All right, A-Sense fans, it's Friday, October 23rd, and this is the New Era Sense Podcast, Episode 2. I'm your host, Mike Stelzner, also known as Chucking Like Brady on Twitter, and I can be found at GoSense727. I'm joined by my great co-host, Nick DeMolin, DeMolin underscore Nick on Twitter, and Noah Turgeon, Sense Noah All. All right, boys, so jumping right in to the biggest news of the week with our Senators. Everyone's been talking about it. Connor Brown sticking around for another 3 years at $3.6 million per season, turning 27 in January. So it could be said he's right in the prime of his career, or entering his prime, and coming off 43 points, 16 goals, 27 assists last season. And that was in 71 games. So, guys, do we see him around the 40, 50 point range again? Or if you have him in a top six role all season, playing with better players this season, could he even hit, I don't know, 55, 60 ceiling on Connor Brown? And what do we think of the signing?
Connor Brown came from a Toronto Maple Leafs team where he was basically outcasted as the depth piece that was no longer needed, quote unquote, for the rebuild. But it feels like this is the kind of player that they've needed all along. I'm very, very happy that we managed to get this guy back here for another 3 years. He's committed to the same length of deal as Evgeny Dadonov. So it's the same sort of thing. If Dadonov doesn't work out, then Connor Brown won't work out, and that'll just be a nice offload of money.
Yeah. And it's definitely nice to have some leadership in the locker room with all these young players coming in. So to have Connor Brown coming back for another 3 years, especially with Dadonov, I'm thrilled. And obviously, it's probably what I would have given him anyways. So to see him come back for 3 years is great for the team and for the young players. So all around, super happy for this guy to be on our team. And like you said, Noah, like this is a guy most teams would really want for these playoffs push. So this is amazing for us.
Well, he's a foot soldier, right? Like he jumps into the corners. If I don't know how many people can remember the very first goal that was scored in the season last year, but it was just about 30 seconds into the game against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it was a dump into the zone. Connor Brown jumps on the puck in the corner and gets it right to Brady Tkachuk in front of the net. So that's the kind of player that Connor Brown is. He's able to play with the superstars. He's able to jump into the corners and get the pucks off of people and get them to your star players to make big plays.
Yeah, right on, Noah. I think that's an excellent point. The Sens are clearly building a team that's going to be pretty top heavy on just raw talent. And then you're going to have your bottom six guys or guys that could jump in to a top six role too. I look at Connor Brown as like a really versatile guy in that sense. You know, Drake Batherson's working out in the top six yet. Put him on the third line, put Brown in the top six. If Batherson is ready to be the second line right winger behind Dadonov, then Connor Brown could be your third line guy. So I feel that's really important to be able to put him back and forth throughout the lineup.
Yeah,
I really needed this contract, especially to be smaller than Colin White's.
Yep,
it had to be less than Colin White's. As much as Colin White's a younger player who I think the offensive upside is more than Connor Brown. So if you're looking at it that way, Colin White signed for $4.75 million over 6 years.
Yeah.
Connor Brown is only at 3.6 for three. I think that's a fantastic deal.
Yeah, let's not forget also we avoid arbitration. So this could have very much ended up a one-year deal, you know, if it went through that route. So I'm happy to have him for 3 years. It's safe. He'll be 30 by the time that ends. So whatever we choose to do with him after that, we'll see. But he could prove to be a very valuable guy, especially in our top six, like you said, Mike. So I'm excited. And also for Batherson last year, we all thought he was ready to crack that top six. He wasn't. Like he struggled a bit. So this very much could happen again this year. So I think Connor Brown is a safe bet and very good player to fill in on the second line. So this is good for us for the next 3 years.
So are you guys not really ready to hand that spot over to Drake Batherson yet? Kind of like, let's see where he's at in camp first part of the season, but we're not handing anything out to players right now.
I've never liked the idea of trying to hand something to a player. A player has to earn their minutes. But that being said, I don't like the other side of the token where we had Guy Boucher and Dave Cameron playing guys like Tommy Pyatt and all of these bottom six guys instead of your prospects.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. And it's also the year for a lot of our guys to take the jump too. So I would expect them to really be challenging for those spots. And if they don't, well, I can see that our other guys will be stepping up to the plate and taking those filler jobs. But I expect a big year from our rookies. And I hope that a lot of them really do crack the top six, top nine. Batherson is one, obviously. He really deserves to be there, I think, after the last 2 years. But we'll see. Same case as last year. He did jump into that role and he didn't really, you know, he wasn't really too consistent. So I expect more consistency to their game all around this year.
It's the skating for Batherson. He needs to get that extra step. His average skating, he's got a big body and he uses it well, but it's the skating that he just, if he can get that extra step, that explosive first couple steps, then yeah, he can be an elite hockey player because he's got the vision, he's got the size, he's got some of the silkiest, smoothest hands I've seen in a fourth round pick in a long time. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. There's just so much with Batherson there. We've seen it in flashes, and you're right, Noah. To your point, you're never going to hand anything out to anybody in the NHL, in any sport. From that point of view, I was trying to come at it like we're completing the rebuild right now, and we should be giving all of our young players the biggest opportunity that we can give them, but they absolutely still have to go out and earn it.
Yeah, for sure. They can't, you can't give something to somebody and watch them struggle in the role. That's exactly what happened to Curtis Lazar, and we can't have that with these players.
But I saw a tweet today on Twitter. It was someone suggesting that Logan Brown should maybe be put on the top line center just to, you know, surround him with the better players and see if he can capitalize on that opportunity. So there's also the case that, you know, if you do give bigger roles to guys and better players to play with, maybe that might, you know, grow their potential a bit more. So I'm curious to see what DJ really thinks about doing next year. So, anything can go, but I'm with you guys. I don't think we should rush these guys, and the person who deserves it and earns it the most should be given that opportunity. So you're bang on that one.
I think you can make the argument that Logan Brown did make a statement and did deserve it with his play in the AHL. Over point per game, like we touched on last week, over point per game is nothing to scoff at for a 22-year-old 6'6", 230-pound centerman. Yeah, like that, you just can't look past that. I think that alone has given him an opportunity right here to really showcase his talents in the top six and show that he wasn't just a waste of a trade up.
Yep. No, exactly. I think we talked about that in quite good detail last week. So just to touch on it again briefly, Logan Brown is somebody that could still be a big piece for the Sens. I think we all like his game. I think all Sens fans want to see him succeed in a Sens jersey, not somewhere else, a la, you know, because of Bennett in New York. So I think it really is just time to give these guys just the utmost confidence. And if they're not cutting it, we have the depth now. We have more serviceable players, more reliable guys that could step in, take some pressure off of them, right, guys? I mean,
yeah,
like you said though, we the days of having Tom Pye and Gabriel Dumont in getting top, those days are long gone. Like, I hope.
I hope for sure.
Yeah, DJ's more centered around the younger players anyway, so you would expect him to really give them the chance to be successful on our team, and I hope that's the case anyway.
Yeah, I trust DJ Smith with setting up the lines properly for the best development that these prospects can get. He's been only good to us so far, so I can't complain about the upcoming season.
Yeah, you're right.
So if you guys had to pick, who would you say should get the first crack at being the top line center? Assuming everybody has a good camp and all things are equal. Personally, I think, you know, it might be a little too soon to expect a guy like Josh Norris to grab a big role like that. Logan Brown, jury's out there. There was an interesting comment thrown out by someone on Twitter today or yesterday, and they were saying, what about Artem Anisimov on the top line?
Okay. I mean,
he's playing with Dadanov. Apparently, he was a big reason why Dadanov signed here. They have a history together. They've trained together. Maybe see if there's some chemistry there. I don't know.
Well, Anisimov's a big guy, right? He's a big centerman. He doesn't skate all that well, but he's still, as we saw last year, he's still shown that he can shoot the puck quite well. Like, he scored 15 goals, was it?
Yep.
Yeah.
15 goals in the NHL. That's not bad.
Especially for a 32-year-old.
32-year-old playing on the 30th NHL hockey team.
Yeah, I also think what's clear with the Sens is that we don't really have, you know, that clear first line. Like, I think I've noticed this a few times in our games, is that DJ likes to roll a lot of the lines with equal minutes. Obviously, guys like Tkachuk and Shabbat will eat more ice time, but you tend to see that not one line gets more ice time than the other. So I don't know if that's the case this year, but if it is, then Anisimov, I mean, wouldn't be a bad shout to put him with Dadanov.
I would say if you're going to go with the first, who's going to get the first crack at the first line center is probably going to be Chris Tierney, just because he's been here. He's been here pretty much through at least a good chunk of what we've seen the last 2 years. And he's the furthest ahead in the sense of what would be an NHL centerman. So I think Chris Tierney's, he's going to be, we have to remember for Chris Tierney as well, the year he got traded to the Senators, he put up as many assists as Mark Stone. That was the same year that Mark Stone got traded to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Vegas.
But he still put up the same number of assists, which is not something that a lot of people can remember.
Yeah.
Right.
I think I would put Colin White, though, at the number one center, just so he can get that bounce back, playing with guys like Tkachuk and having another guy like Dadanov. Like, you saw him with Tkachuk and Stone. He was really great. Like, he was playing with two guys that are very good. He was succeeding. So I think that's what maybe was missing, a nice right wing addition maybe to complete the line. But you put him on that line, maybe he goes back to what he was before. Then again, if you have Stützle coming in and you start him on the wing, maybe a guy like Tierney, considering he's a bit older, vet presence on that line with Stützle would not be a bad idea either. So I don't know. I'd say Colin White for the number one, but anything can go.
My thinking for Colin White would be that he's coming off of a pretty, I mean, he had a couple games at the end of the season there, but he didn't have very much playing time last year. It's kind of hard to thrust a guy straight into the number one spot.
Yeah, but I mean, he was playing that big of a role when he was playing with Stone and Tkachuk. So maybe if, you know, you put him in that role again with another good player, maybe that makes him a bit better this year. I don't know, more confidence, whatnot. But you're right. It would be tough to give him that first line role. But we'll see. I really don't know.
I think it could be any number of guys, and that's what's so healthy to have that competition for a young team. I mean, Colin White needs to get his confidence back. I think you just touched on that, Noah. His talent is there. We've seen it from him before. He had the pedigree coming up as a prospect, first-round draft pick. So it's easy to have a guy like Colin White, I think, slip down the radar and the depth chart just a little bit when you have, you know, the Stutzlers and the Sandersons being drafted and you're bringing
in good point.
Off at a Matt Murray. Yeah, I mean, it just gets to a point where there's only so many guys Sens fans can get excited about at once. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm guilty of it a lot. 2 years ago, I loved Colin White. I was very high on him. One not so great season, and it's not that I gave up on him, but the confidence as a fan and obviously as a coach with DJ and Dorian, just from the top down, nobody had that confidence in him last year. Colin White didn't even have the confidence in himself. So if he can get that back up, he could absolutely be the number one center, at least as a placeholder until maybe you put Stutzla in that spot or you trade for someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure.
So do you guys think Anisimov would be a good fit on the top line? Because we went back and forth with a lot of names there, and we didn't mention Brady Tkachuk on that top line. So a top line of Brady, Anisimov, and Dadonov, you have a lot of skill, you have a lot of size. I would like to see it.
I wouldn't mind seeing that either, but I don't know. I just feel there's not nearly enough speed on that line. That line's going to get chewed up by a line that's built for speed. You know, the dump and chase, get back into the zone much faster. It's got potential, and it's a fun line to look at. But I don't think you can honestly look at the Sens depth chart and put Artem Anisimov as the number one center.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. There's probably no way.
I love the player, and you know, Artie Party, he's got his own nickname here in Ottawa and on the radio station. Everybody loves him, and you know, it's all that, but I don't think he's got the skill to be the number one center, especially with these youngins coming up with, you know, with Tim Stutzel and Josh Norris and Colin White. That's three right there that are going to be pretty high on that center depth chart.
And you look at last year, Anisimov wasn't playing that big of a role. Like, he still was, I guess, but he's still, you know, getting fed those bottom minutes on our team. So I don't see, especially with all our guys coming this year, I just don't see DJ putting that guy in our top six, but we'll see if he performs or whatever happens. I guess he ends up there, sure, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he's spending too much time as your number one center, there's a problem still.
You're not, yeah, that's it,
in the rebuild the way you should be. But maybe just for like a few games, a hot stretch if they're clicking. But I mean, I brought it up, guys, because I do recall Anisimov playing some number one center with either Columbus or Chicago or the Rangers. I don't remember where it was, but
it would be the Rangers. He played. I know he played a lot with Patrick Kane and Alex Artemi Panarin. It was Patrick Kane, Artemi Panarin, and Artem Anisimov there in Chicago, and that was a killer second line. Exactly. So he does have skill. It's not like he doesn't. It's just I don't know if the feet are still there. It's the keeping up with the play, right? It's the keeping up with the Sidney Crosbys and keeping up with the, you know, Matt Barzals and the guys that can just blow right by NHL defensemen.
Yeah.
It's keeping up with those guys.
Yeah. Be cool to see.
Yeah, I think that right there, that might be a really, really smart top power play line, but I don't know about your top your 5-on-5. Power play, it might be interesting because you can get Artie Party on the side with his nice shot, and you got Dadonov on the other side with his nice shot. Tkachuk always stands in front of the net because it's Tkachuk. You've got your size, you've got some skill, you don't all need all that much speed because you're passing the puck around inside the zone as opposed to coming up on the rush more often.
Yeah.
I think that could be a fun power play line.
You would have to assume, though, that Stützle would be on that line too, right?
You would hope. You would hope. Yeah. You would hope in all, you know, in a perfect Sens world, we're not talking about, you know, the Chris Tierneys or the Artem Anisimovs on the first line. We're not talking about that. We're talking first shift, Stützle steps on the ice and scores a goal and then scores another three in the game. And that's our perfect world, right?
NHL 21.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, no, I think that's where we all want to be, where we don't have to be talking about these guys so much. But I think this year we will still be talking about them.
It's going to be the year. It's that year last where
year.
It's the last year. It really is. Because this is the last year where you can really look at the team and say, I honestly don't care where they finish. If they finish right at the very bottom of the standings, great. We're getting a Kent Johnson or a Owen Power. If we, if we finish closer to the playoffs, then great. We have progression. There's visible progression in the season. So I don't think you can really go wrong with any finishing anywhere this season.
Yeah. No expectations. That's why it's so good for our players, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure, Nick. I mean, you want to be on that right track. And I think I touched on last week, any successful rebuild is going to be between 3 and 5 years. This is your 18, 19, 20, third full year. Next year would be the fourth. And then by the time you're at year five, you're a playoff team. You're trying to even be a top team in the conference because your young guys have gotten that playing time and development. So the 21-22 season, that's where all the real fun begins. That's when all the top guys that we've been talking about are grabbing those roster spots. And this year, for the ones that make the team and get decent roles, you have the Anisimovs and the Tierneys and the Connor Browns and even the Matt Murrays to be there as mentors for them, which is why I love so much of what Dorian's done. Even a guy like Austin Watson's been around like six seasons now.
Or Eric Branson, who's been around how many? 13 to 15?
Yeah.
He's right up there.
Definitely up there. I can't remember when he was drafted. It was like 2010?
2011. Yeah. What did he go, second overall? What was it?
No, that's Zach Bogosian.
Right, right. When did he go?
He was third overall in 2010.
Okay, yeah.
2010, okay.
Yeah, well done. Okay, so 9 seasons. A little off there.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. And I think a lot of people might have been a little too quick to judge a guy like Eric Branson, because you're not bringing him in for his defensive play. You're not bringing him in for his hockey skill set, you know, because he never reached that point he was supposed to. You're bringing him in to clear bodies in front of the net, not have guys run after your stars, and to show the younger guys a thing or two off the ice. That's why he's here.
Yeah, just being a pro, it's why he's been around for so long. So, I mean, definitely younger guys can learn from that, which I can't complain. So that's a good addition.
Look at the entirety of the offseason moves made by the Senators. None of them scream like middling team anymore. All of these moves are bringing in for leadership, size, and just drive. This is a playoff built team. Everyone's got size. Everyone's got speed. Everyone's got skill. It just seems like this team, everyone's got grit, right? Everyone's got an edge. Everybody's willing to jump in that corner and just start swinging their fists. So I honestly, the mean streak that we have on Ridley Greig and Brady Tkachuk and Alex Formanton, just those three alone are great.
Yeah.
And then we have Tyler Cleven, who is 6 foot, 200 pounds, and he might be the meanest of them all. Right? So, you know, we've got a team that's really, really starting to be built built for the playoffs.
Yeah, and you look like you look at a guy like Josh Norris last year. I think he had a few fights, if I'm not mistaken. I know he had one. So that's nice. You see these guys, they're skilled guys in our minds, but they'll still step up and take the hard battles and fights. So this is definitely a playoff team up and coming, and you're bang on, Noah, for that.
Yeah, he did have that one fight, Nick. You're right. I remember it vividly because I was watching the game with a buddy and left the room to get a beer for like 2 seconds, and then he reacted. And it was like, oh my God, fighting, and I was like, who's fighting? He's like, Norris is fighting. Wow, why? And I rushed back in the room. And I was like, no way. Like, why is Norris fighting? I loved everything about it because, you know, you want your talented players to have that edge and not take any crap from the tougher goons.
Yeah, Batherson has done it as well. So, I mean, we got other guys that are doing it too. So, which is nice from younger players.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always nice to see a little bit of grit and a little bit of don't touch my player kind of ordeal with some of these younger guys.
Yeah, and you can imagine that most of these guys are all going to be gelled together, very tight group together, very close in the locker room. So, I mean, you see a big hit against one of our players next year, you can imagine that one of our guys is going to go and take care of that. So that's really nice to see. How close Doriel's making, you know, making sure everybody is and bringing all these players that are familiar with one another. So, I think it's great to see all of that just kind of all come together.
Well, geez, yeah, a whole lot of them grew up together. Yeah. Logan Brown, Colin White, and Brady Tkachuk, they all grew up in St. Louis.
Yeah,
they all played junior together as well.
They came up through the U.S. program too, World Juniors, under 20s, and then the World Juniors. Sorry, under 18s, and then the World Juniors. So they were in the U.S. program for a long time, and we're not talking just like a cup of coffee together and hey, how you doing in the locker room. We're talking training all the time. We're talking, you know, socializing with other groups of friends that are non-hockey players. We're talking about just experiencing everything there is to experience to become in a pro hockey player. And how many teams can say they have three guys that have that?
And it's not just them as well, right? Yeah,
it's the UND guys too. You got Pinto and Bernard Docker and Sanderson. Like, wow, like that's just a lot of chemistry to be building with your top guys.
Yeah, the more you can get your young guys playing together before they hit the big show, the better.
Yeah, Sokolov with Batherson as well, so that's cool.
Yeah, and Mandalese.
Yeah,
everyone. It just seems like everybody's got a connection now. Everybody's either got a connection to Ottawa, or a connection to a player on Ottawa. Yeah, it just everybody seems connected.
I posted somehow a tweet not too long ago. I was saying how probably the next UND player or whatever you want to say, I was saying the next person from UND that's probably going to join the Sens as their head coach, as a assistant coach down the line, you know, when our guys make the jump from the AHL or the US NCAA league to the NHL. Can imagine having a guy like that, another familiar face, wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, no, that would be a fantastic idea.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Nick. I think that's something DJ Smith was very keen on when he came in. He wanted guys he was familiar with and guys that supported him coming up through the NHL. So why not reach out to a coach from UND who's so familiar with these guys?
Yeah, Brad Berry.
Okay. I'm not too familiar with him, but I know he's done great work with that program there. Would DJ be worried if the Sens hit a funk? You know, is Dorian building a list? Do you think all GMs have a list ready to go of guys they want to replace if they need to?
Oh, I would think Brad Berry would come in more as a coach or an associate coach.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, you. you'd hope that he wouldn't be coming in as the head coach. You'd hope it'd be still DJ.
But I mean, UND's been a top team for, you know, quite a bit. So I'm sure he'll get an NHL gig eventually, that guy. There's no doubt about that if he keeps going and, you know, ice is a competitive team year after year.
Mm-hmm. I think you're starting to see more of that with NCAA coaches making that jump and getting opportunities. You got David Quaid in New York. Jim Montgomery got the shot in Dallas, and then things went south. Not really sure what happened with them there, but very quickly on that note, if Dallas doesn't make that coaching change to Rick Bowness and Montgomery stayed, do they make the final still? How much credit do you want to give to Jim Montgomery as a coach, and then how much credit do you want to give to Rick Bowness as a coach who hadn't been a head coach in God knows how long when he came in?
I do want to give a lot of credit to Rick Bowness for coming in and looking at, you know, a team that do you remember the owner calling out Sagan and Ben, saying they were worthless at the beginning of the year? Like that team just felt like it was sort of just stuck in its tracks. It had fantastic players.
Yeah,
like you can't go wrong with Heiskanen. You can't go wrong with Ben or Sagan or Radulov or any of those guys, but they just could never seem to really put it together. It was really actually exciting to see them make it further than they usually do.
Do you think they just had a bit more energy when it came to the bubble situation? Like, do you think that played an effect as to why they went so far compared to other teams? Because you could almost tell that some players didn't want to be there from some other teams. I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe they were just a team that really wanted to be there and go all the way. I was pretty shocked to see Dallas stay in there. So could be that, but, you know.
I mean, yeah, I was pretty shocked too. I have a friend that's a big Stars fan. If you're listening, how's it going, Aaron? Congrats to your Stars. But I mean, I thought Colorado was taking them out for sure. And if they didn't have the injuries they had piling up on them, they probably still would have. But I think you're right, Nick, to your point. Some teams had guys that were just saying, like, what are we doing here? We were just off for 4 months, and we're stuck in a bubble, all confined. Hard to get that energy and motivation. And then a team like Dallas might have said, you know what? This is still the NHL playoffs, so we have a chance to win a cup. And we're going to put everything we got into this for the next 2 months. And the result was making the final. So,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe could very much be the case. So,
and I hope we never find out again, because it sounds like the players don't want anything to do with another bubble.
Well, speaking of that, I was just reading an article about Darren Dreger who retweeted it. I think it was, it was an article from Michael Russo from The Athletic. It was about the NHL's plan for the 2020-2021 season. And it's I was reading how obviously the Canadian division was coming up as a topic, but most of the things I was seeing was division realignments. So one of the things that came up was that maybe they'd have a hub city in every division. They would play whatever amount of games there, and then obviously reevaluate the standings after and make a bubble based off of that and for the playoffs. So we'll see. I don't know if that's the case. Then we'd have like 4 bubble cities for the start of the season.
So. Yeah, I'd like to see that. That'd be fun to. We've heard a lot of speculation about what those bubbles would look like, and I have to say I would just love to watch an all Canadian division.
Yeah,
that'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd just be something different, and it would be really interesting to see how the standings would shape up, especially for a team like Ottawa. Maybe even a team like Detroit, who's definitely improved with the moves they've made. And then they don't have to face the Tampas, the Bostons, the Washingtons of the world. Yeah, I'd be all for that. And if there were hubs and bubbles in one or two Canadian cities, and that's the only teams we were playing, and we're allowed to travel within Canada, I'm going. I'm taking a trip. I don't care about, you know, COVID affecting my life that much. I miss hockey, and I'm taking a little trip to see the Sens play wherever, if they're in Canada, wherever they are going to be situated.
Another thing also, like, we'll get to see, that's going to be, I guess, pretty cool, is a bubble for the World Juniors that are coming up. So that's definitely something new, and I'm excited to see how it'll go. I saw a tweet saying that the NHL scouts weren't allowed to scout the players in person at the World Junior Tournament, so that's a bit different. I'm excited to see how that plays out. I think they've got quite a few games scheduled, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's a whole new world, right, guys? I mean,
yeah.
Trickle down effect to literally everything. People will say, oh, it's just sports. It's just sports. Sports is its own entity. It's its own world. And people that follow it, people that play a lot of sports know how difficult it could be to put a season together. I've seen it a lot in a lot of interviews. With people that work for various leagues, saying, you know, we're working around the clock. When one season ends, they're getting ready for the next season, putting schedules together, travel arrangements for all the teams. It's a lot. So all the credit to the NHL for being able to pull off the bubble this summer. And if they can figure something out where it's safe to travel around and they get permission from local governments to go ahead, I can't wait. I think the next season's gonna be a blast, no matter what the setup is, with all the teams that have improved and more young players coming up. I can't wait. I want hockey back already, boys.
Yeah, it's crazy to see how different next year is gonna play out, and that would probably leak into, you know, the drafts being a bit different and a few other things maybe. Obviously, no All-Star game and stuff, but a little bit on the draft, there was something on Twitter. I think Justin Gardner tweeted out about, it was like an article that says some GMs are calling for changes for the NHL draft lottery. I don't know if that's directly because of COVID. I didn't really read the article or anything like that. But if that's the case, it kind of sucks, I guess, that we're not a bottom team or, you know, looking to be next year. Could be, but who knows? But that's also something that's different going into next year. If they do try to change the draft lottery, it obviously sucks because you saw all the discussion this year about changing that, since it was a bit unfair considering some bubble teams had an opportunity at that. And you clearly saw that play out with Lafreniere going to New York. So that's something I'd really like to see what happens with. And yeah, I'm just unfortunate that we missed that chance this year.
Yeah.
What do you guys think the NHL GM's opinion and stance would have been on the Rangers getting Lafreniere? I mean, fans hated it. Do you think GMs looked at it the same way? Like they didn't really need him. Look at the core they already had in place. There were about 10 or 12 other teams that could have used Lafreniere way more than the Rangers. So is that just a hockey fan kind of perspective, or do you think that's shared around the executives in the league?
You want to go first, Nick?
Yeah, well, just based off that article, I mean, the title says some GMs calling for changes to the NHL draft lottery, so I'm sure a lot of them weren't so pleased. But, I mean, you heard that there were complaints before even talking about the format last season. Like, they were saying, we should keep it the way it is, or we should, you know, go back to what it was. It's more fair that way. So, I mean, there was complaints from the start, but they ended up keeping it what it was. But clearly, I mean, some GMs aren't happy. We'll see. Obviously, like you said, there was way other teams that were in need of him more than the Rangers were. So if you look at it in that perspective, it's a bit unfair considering the Rangers might be, you know, not a cup favorite, but a really skilled team next year, which isn't fair to give them the first overall pick So, I mean, yeah, there's definitely people who aren't happy, and we'll see if that really changes anything.
I think the majority of the GMs were, I mean, they accepted the terms and conditions of this draft lottery. We heard Pierre Dorion. He said, you know, there was no complaints from Ottawa's side. So I don't know. I feel like the anger is coming from the fans more than the GMs themselves. But you never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, guys. Well, let's circle back to the Sens as we get into the later portion of the podcast. I do want to get your guys' take on a couple of our prospects. One that has been in the system for a year, we got through trade, Vitaly Abramov. And the other, one of our newer prospects, Robbie Gerventy. So they're both playing for SM League and the Finnish League. And they're both just tearing it up right now. The Sens are doing the Prospect Watch or Sens in Europe, hashtag Sens in Europe. I love it. Give us prospect coverage. I want to see more of it while there is in hockey. I don't know a ton about Gerventy. Noah, you were telling us recently when we were all chatting that you watched him a lot, you know a lot about his game. Talk to us about Robbie Gerventy. What are we getting with this kid? What's his ceiling looking like?
His kid's ceiling is it's hard to project his ceiling out. I don't think he's ever going to be a top line forward. I think if you're looking at your ceiling, you're looking at max a second line left wing. He doesn't have explosive skating, or he doesn't have any of these super talents that make him stand out more than, you know, the majority of prospects. But this guy just does everything right. He gets into good positioning. He's strong on the puck. He's able to move quickly, and he's got a decent enough shot to be able to score goals. He's just a smart hockey player who's able to do everything right. He's exactly what you want as a hockey player. He feels like he really could be another Connor Brown type player. A foot soldier. Another guy.
Okay.
He's got, so far, he's got 3 goals and 7 points in 8 games with Ilves in SM Liga, which this kid missed the... he just made the cutoff for the draft by a couple days or something, less than a month. Like, this kid's one of the youngest ones in the draft, and he's a very young 18. He's the same age as Sanderson, I believe, or is it Grieg? He shares a birthday with one of the other, I think it's Grieg. August 8th, really. Yeah, so he shares a birthday with Ridley Grieg, which is a fun little tidbit.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's 6'2". He's listed on Elite Prospects as 185, but I've heard reports recently that he's put on some weight. He's looking more along the lines of 200 to 215 in that range of weight. So he's bulked up a bit. He's got a bit more strength. He looks a bit bigger, which is nice. I just feel like this kid could fill out even a bit more and act as a really nice power forward.
That's funny you say that, because then you look at a guy like Abramov, you know, short, you know, smaller type of player, but equally skilled, maybe even more. He's got 5 goals in 3 games to start his career in Liga. So, yeah, obviously it's very promising to see this from our guys in Europe. And I'm really excited to see how the rest of their season ends up playing out. But obviously very impressive. You can imagine Abramov's going to wear that gold helmet soon enough. I scored 5 out of the 8 goals for his team since joining. So
that's pretty good. Huge.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice to see, and maybe his confidence is rolling. And obviously, if he continues to play like that, come training camp time, I would put that guy right on their top six, right on our team, if he can perform like that. And obviously he's got the confidence to do it, so we'll see, man. But this is very great for Sens fans to see.
I think if he's got that momentum going straight into, if he's still producing at the pace, he obviously probably won't be producing at an over almost two goals per game pace by the time training camp rolls around. But once you're looking at that, if he still does have a very high productive rate going once training camp opens, then yeah, I agree. I think you stick him straight on to one of those top six lines and you just see how he does.
Yeah.
Use that momentum that he built in the other league and you just try to transfer it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if he's not ready and another guy beats him out and earns a spot, then I'm totally fine if he stays in Finland and doesn't even spend the year in North America.
Yeah. And also, you have to consider that it's a bigger ice over there. So maybe because he's smaller and he's faster, I could take advantage of that. So maybe it's not a bad idea, like you said, Mike, to keep him there for the year.
His foot speed has never been something that's – it's always been average. It's never been something that has been a standout attribute of his. So that's been his biggest knock. Because he has he oozes talent, right? This guy is just – he can make such high-level plays. I think his talent level is just off the charts. He just needs to bulk up a little bit and figure out how to skate a bit better.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Has a ton of talent. I think he was one of the Blue Jackets' better prospects when we acquired him. Do you guys remember if we got him in the Duclair deal or the Duchesne deal?
It was Duchesne.
Okay. So that deal doesn't happen. We don't get Abramov. And Columbus doesn't pick up Duchesne that year unless their prior history in the playoffs was abysmal and ownership finally said, do whatever it takes to make it and make a run. So, you know, Jarmo Kekäläinen at the time, I don't know how much he was looking at the value of his prospects like a few years down the road. I don't know. Maybe he's regretting that now. He's seen what Abramov's doing there and they obviously only had Duchesne for, 20 something games.
Yeah. No, you can, as much as you want to try to give some fault for Jarmo for that, think about what he did, you know?
Oh, he's a great GM.
And he knocked off the Tampa Lightning.
Yeah.
And everybody forgets this, but he made the playoffs the next year with the team that lost. You know, it lost Panarin, it lost Dzingel, it lost Duchesne and Bobrovsky, and it still made the playoffs the next year.
Yeah.
If that isn't a testament to John Tortorella, I don't know what is.
I love Torts, man. I mean, he's great. He's got so much longevity in the NHL now, and he had that cup with Tampa so long ago, and sure, they were
an easy
team. Yeah, it's... That was a long time ago now. And then, you know, Vancouver didn't really work. The Rangers didn't really work out. And now here he is. And this is what he's doing with an underachieving or a team that has no business being that good. A team that, for all intents and purposes, probably should have gone into a rebuild when they lost all those star players. But now they're looking good again. You got
I'm curious to see Domi, like you're saying. Yeah, I'm curious to see how he's going to mesh with Torts, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that should be really interesting.
Renato
is welcome in Arizona, and then same thing kind of happened in Montreal, I guess. I don't understand that trade from Montreal's perspective at all. But, you know, if Josh Anderson comes in and scores 25 goals from them, I'll be the first one to admit I was wrong about that. But
so... The thing that I like to say about the Josh Anderson deal is that if Josh Anderson can come in and he can be healthy, then Montreal won that deal. Josh Anderson is the better player between him and Max Domi. It's just Anderson is injury riddled and he's always out of the lineup. He's coming off of a major surgery as well.
Yeah.
And you give a guy a major shoulder surgery, that's always a taboo, right? That's a tough thing to say to an athlete, is that you have to get shoulder surgery. That's where worries come in for longevity, right? It's tough. You can't give a guy 7 years coming off of a major shoulder surgery. Like I said, that's where the worries come in, right? When you hear shoulder surgery, that's when you start thinking, okay, where's the longevity come in?
Yeah, I think that's a killer for the Habs. You know, that you look at some of their contracts and it's just a bit, you know, it's hard to be, like, being transparent here. I just don't see some of their contracts as good contracts. Obviously, you see it with Weber and how long that's going to go on till. But yeah, I think that's going to come back to kill them a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with you, Nick. I think they're building something pretty good with their young players. Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, Cole Caulfield's on the way up. Caden Primo is eventually going to replace Price. Alex Romanov. Like, they have some really, really talented players coming up, just like the Sens. But there's a few of those contracts that's going to make it difficult for them to, I guess, improve their team and take that next step over the next few years. Would you agree with that, Nick?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, they got really good, promising prospects. Definitely at the top of the NHL in terms of prospects. But then again, like, I just don't, with some of their contracts, I just don't see them having that easy route of developing their guys, inserting them into the lineup and being that much better. Weber is only going to fall off from here. Like you said, Anderson's a big question mark. He could play out and be great for them, but it's another big question mark, like you said, Noah. So we'll see, but I don't know. I just, it's hard to imagine that they're going to be that much better 5 years time.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe that's just because I'm not a big fan, you know, either. So
yeah, it's hard to give the Habs credit, but I try to, because when you're a fan of the whole game, I try to, you know, recognize talent on other teams, and there are some players I'm excited to watch on the Habs, but I definitely, no bias aside, I like where the Sens are setting up for the future a lot better.
Yeah, that's just being a Sens fan, you know.
I agree with that. There's got to be some bias in that.
It's interesting looking at the Habs for the upcoming season. I do just want to make a quick point on them, is that if you look at the moves that they made, objectively, the Bruins didn't get better. They lost Krug, which is pretty big. They're going to lose Chara. That's another pretty big move. So
they added nobody.
They didn't add, well, they added Craig Smith. That was a very good deal.
Okay.
That's 5-time 20 goal scorer. That's a good deal. But objectively, I don't think they got all that much better. So you look at Montreal and what they've done. What about Toronto? I don't think they objectively got better. They've done a couple things. They've brought in they brought in TJ Brody, they brought in Thornton, they brought back Spezza. They've got leadership, they've got a couple good things, but objectively they didn't get all that much better. Montreal did exactly what they needed to do. They went and got some size for the wings and a backup goaltender.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's tough to say because the season hasn't started, but I would argue that the Leafs did get a whole lot better. I mean, for the price that Kapanen and Johnsson was, They literally get Bogosian, they get Brody, they get Thornton, they get Simmons, they get Joey Anderson, they get Aaron Dell. Those are a lot of guys they can bring in for a deep playoff run for probably the same price that two of their previous players were costing them. So we'll see. But I think Thornton on your team brings a lot of leadership. I just still see them better than the Habs, and we'll see what happens on the ice, really.
Yeah, I don't really get that whole argument with the Habs. I definitely think the Leafs are the better team still.
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know. I just think you look at a healthy Suzuki with a Kotkaniemi, and you've got Poehling coming up. You've got Anderson. You've got Toffoli. You've got, you know, I just think that Romanov on defense, you've got Petrie is still there. He's still a top defenseman, right? Noah Juulsen is also there. Like, they've got a whole, like, smattering of young players. I really think that they've got sort of the same situation as Ottawa. You get a couple of them that take a big step, and boom, you're a playoff team.
Absolutely. I definitely could see them being a playoff team again. It's just, if you're saying who's better between Montreal and Toronto, Montreal, like Ottawa, doesn't have Hughes or Marner or
Toronto. Right.
So to me, you have your top end talent, and there's no real touch in that when you're completing a rebuild. So I think the Leafs are still going to be right there with Boston, with Tampa. If anyone's falling, I agree with you guys that Boston could take a hit. I mean, they lost Torrey Krug, their top power play quarterback. Guy would put up, what, like 50 points a season?
Yeah.
They're trying to replace it with Lauzon and
Zboril.
Yeah, I'm not even that familiar with a lot of these guys on their D unit now, but
he was one of their picks in the 2015 draft, wasn't he?
Zboril was. He was one of the dreaded three that they picked.
Yeah. They could have taken Shabbat.
They could have taken Shabbat, Connor, and Barzal, but they took Zboril, Senishin, and DeBrusk, which DeBrusk is a good pick, but really over Shabbat, Connor, Kyle Connor, and Matt Barzal. No. And that was in
2015?
Yeah. So 2015, Boston had three picks in a row.
So two of those three guys have done absolutely nothing in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They hit on one of the three, and the next three became All-Stars.
Yep.
Yep.
Just goes to show you.
It does, man. It does. The prospects, you never know what you're getting, and
yeah,
you never know when you're going to be kicking yourself years later.
But no, but I remember at the time, sorry to interrupt, but I remember at the time, they even at the time, people were kind of skeptical of those picks. They were pretty off-the-board picks. Remember the Senshin pick was definitely off the board.
Zboril as well.
Yeah, for sure. Zboril came from the same team as Shabbat did. They played on the same team. They played on the same pairing.
Crazy.
Wow. And he was picked just, three, four spots in head? That draft could have been.
I love looking back at drafts like that and just seeing Boss who didn't pan out. I hope some of our listeners, you know, if you're not too familiar with prospects and other teams around the league, go look up some of these guys on Boston we just mentioned and go see what their stats look like in junior. Get a good idea of how big of a bust they really are now. All right, guys, well, that was fun. That brings us to the end of this edition of the New Era Sense podcast. Would like to give a shout out to Jacob Larivière and Alex Langlois. They're from the Talking Some Sens page and podcast. I'm actually jumping on their newest episode of their podcast, so you can check that out. I think Saturday or Sunday, probably Sunday, I think Jacob said. Jacob's also our producer. He does some great work for us, along with our other producer, Jonathan Ramsey. Shout out to you guys. Also, big shout out to Everyday Sens. I think everyone's been seeing his fantastic work on Instagram and Twitter, the jersey artwork, just so nice. And he's been very kind to let us use some of his work for our articles and Instagram posts. So big shout out to Everyday Seds. He's Everyday Seds on Twitter and everyday.sends on Instagram.
What a guy.
So thanks for listening and joining in, guys. And we'll talk to you next week, Set Seds.